The revolt against the Syrian regime is now over a year old, with by most estimates over 10,000 dead, including over 100 killed in that massacre in Hula. There's been a drumbeat of debate over what to do. Today, Hillary Clinton said every day that goes by makes the argument for military intervention stronger, but then seemed to say it would be impossible, that any military action would have to involve friends of Syria, like Russia and China, and that the current civil war could morph into a proxy war in the region. So the debate does go on. But meanwhile, how is Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and his wife Asma, who came to power as reformers, how are they holding on? Joshua Landis is director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, author of the blog Syria Comment. Joshua, welcome back to Here Now.
It's a pleasure being with you.
And diplomat Richard Murphy writes in Foreign Affairs that the regime in Syria has its supporters in all walks of life and across Syria's religious communities. Is he right?
Yes, he is right. They're of course dwindling rapidly, but he does have supporters in every. The minorities are the natural supporters. The Alawite community, 12%, but the Christians and other minorities are very frightened and fearful of rising Islamic fundamentalism, and the rich are frightened of the poor. So you have a class support. The major cities, urban centers, Damascus, Aleppo, haven't really come out because the rich are worried about losing everything they have to poor country people who are really leading this revolt. And the minorities are worried about the Sunnis who are the most of the people in the most of the revolution.
Well, I want to pick up there because you mentioned the Alawites. This is a Shia subset. Syria is majority Sunni, but ruled by the minority Alawites. So, you know, as everyone has been saying, this is a sectarian. I found it interesting that isn't Bashar Assad Alawite, but his wife Sunni?
Absolutely. She, in many ways, this is one of the ironies, is that the Ba'ath Party and Hafs al-Assad, the father, came to power driven by rural anger at the rich Sunni merchant class of the cities. And they took over, they nationalized land and businesses and so forth, and they dispossessed the urban elites. And today, Bashar al-Assad was born in Damascus, went to schools in Damascus. He is in many ways a Damascene. He speaks with a Shami, a Damascus accent. People in Latakia, theoretically the hometown, the center of the Alawite zone, sort of snicker at him a little bit because he doesn't have an Alawite accent. He tries to put one on when he goes to Latakia, but it's not native. He is part of this urban elite, and he went to the best schools and so forth, and he married a Sunni woman, beautiful woman, from one of the best families who'd been brought up in the West. And it was an attempt at nation building to a certain degree, at bringing these two different communities together in a symbol that he's going to try to create a new, freer Syria that wouldn't have these sectarian problems. Of course, he's failed.
It's got all these interesting class issues, as you say. The father was going to try to upset the ruling class. His son kind of becomes part of the ruling class. And his son, Bashar al-Assad, came to power in 2000, promising economic reform, political liberalization. And it started to happen. There was the Damascus Spring, moves to free the press. Dissidents felt more free to speak out. But then what happened?
Well, Syria didn't grow fast enough. The regime was extremely narrow. The Alawite-dominated regime at the top, there were just a handful of people that the father had used to really rule things. Bashar gets into this, and early on, he had to make a decision whether he was going to break some eggs and try to move into a whole different type of rule, or he was going to keep the rule the same. He kept it the same as his father did, and he thought that he could liberalize at the same time. The problem is that he didn't do what China did, which is to grow at 10% a year. If he had done that, he might have been able to get away with ruling in the same system, one-party state, for much longer. But he didn't. Syria grew at 4% a year. Its population growth is almost 3%. That means it was all very slow growth. And the people in the countryside got hammered by drought, overpopulation. There's too much joblessness, and they became poorer and poorer. The rich, the top, benefited from the opening up. So you got this big income gap, a small 5-10% getting richer at the top, but most Syrians suffered.
Well,
and the failure, economic failure, led to this thing imploding. I'm convinced.
Well, but and you mentioned too that even though the elites in Damascus might snicker at President Assad, others consider him and his wife elite. Dissidents released over 3,000 emails they say are from the couple's private accounts. That's not been verified, but they show her, you know, writing to friends about $5,000 high heel shoes. So there is this sense that they are in the elite from the people far below them.
Oh, absolutely. No, they lead this golden lifestyle up at the top, which has isolated them. And as a son of privilege, his father came from a poor background, fought his way through the top, very tough guy. But the son was born in the lap of luxury. He had a silver spoon in his mouth, and he doesn't understand really the poverty and the suffering that was going, you know, that so many Syrians lived in, and that he was isolated. And his wife, brought up in England, was isolated too. They were trying to do some good things, but Syria needed major creativity, real imagination, and it needed a courageous leader who would break with the system that was based on violence and repression.
Well, meanwhile, the wives of the German and British ambassadors to the UN released a video this spring, quite something. It's urging Asma Assad, again, the president's wife, to stop her husband's regime from committing more bloodshed. It cuts glamorous images of her with images of Syrian mothers mourning their children's death. Let's listen to a little.
One day, our children will ask us what we have done to stop this bloodshed. What will your answer be, Asma? That you, Asma, had no choice?
Joshua Landis, what do you think happens here? She has not responded to that video, but can they last?
Well, at the beginning of this uprising, there was a major attempt. Many people believed that Asma, brought up in Britain, was really a Westerner and that she would turn away from this sort of violence and abandon her husband. And I imagine, I have no proof, that intelligence agencies were thinking of how do we break up this family household. This UN effort might be an idea from coming from some kind of counter operation. I don't know. Maybe it was just a bunch of wives who thought this was a good thing to do. But it was an attempt to break up this family household and to bring down this regime
from
the inside. But now, they stuck together.
Yeah, we're going to have to see how it plays out. Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma on the situation in Syria. Joshua, thanks as always.
Yeah, pleasure.
And we'll link you to his blog, Syria Comment, at hereandnow.org.